Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff. Wednesday. It is June 16th, and we're back with another episode of Destination Different. This week, June 16th, 2021, marks my first episode in my new podcast studio. So, if you've been following along since the beginning of the Destination Different podcast, I started in my mom's basement, recording interviews, sitting at our kitchen table, trying to figure out how to make a podcast work. It did not sound very good. The interviews made no sense because I was terrible. But that's where it started. That was podcast studio number one. Then I moved to the closet. You all should remember the closet. Sitting on the floor, laptop propped on a plastic storage container overturned, the little string light pulled down from above my head. That was studio number two. Great soundproofing. Wi-Fi okay in there. Was right next to the bathroom with the toilet. So every once in a while, you know, my roommates would pop in there, flush the toilet, so you'd get that kind of audio. But for the most part, pretty soundproof sitting in the closet. Not comfortable, but good sound. Then, most recently, next podcast studio was on the 18th floor, same building, but sitting at a desk, you know, a more formal setup. I would say that was maybe my prettiest studio. Had a whiteboard behind me. There was a little plant in the corner, a lamp, decent little backdrop setup. That was okay. It was high up, so you didn't get too many sounds, but I was next to a hospital, so there's a lot of helicopters flying over. Overall, okay, decent studio. That was studio number three. Now, this is the first episode where I am in studio number four. I moved again. I have a new apartment. And I'm figuring it all out. I'm trying to get this sorted. Where am I going to sit? What's it going to sound like? Can you hear the children running outside? Can you hear the dump truck pulling up around the corner? All of those things. I'm sure you'll hear them all as the weeks and months go by and more episodes come out from this new studio. But I am very excited to be in a new place. It's clean. I have a nice little desk set up. I have a nice lamp that I point at my face to make myself look bright on camera. It's coming together. So we are now in the fourth studio on the Destination Different podcast. I've recorded a handful of episodes on the road. I just bring my mic with me and I'm sitting wherever I end up being for the week. But I'd say 90% of episodes are all recorded from the exact same place. So this is studio number four. We'll see how it goes. Someday, you know, maybe months from now, years from now, I will have an actual studio, a nice setup. I can invite guests in to where I'm recording. We can do things live in person. I can look at them. And we can have two mics and talk, and that will be great. But for now, I'm in my bedroom, sitting in a rickety chair. So that's what you get. That's all I had to say in my upfront. I am so excited to bring you this week's guest. Awesome, 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 awesome interview with a founder that I am so confident is onto something amazing because she has solved a problem that everybody has. So my guest on this week's show is Coco Waltz. She is the founder of Hummingbird, which is a sports bra company that has a built-in zipper pocket. And that might sound simple. That might sound incredibly simple, but that is brilliant. I can't tell you, as a man, I can't tell you how many times I've gone out with my phone and my keys and you're running, it's a pain in the ass, they're sweaty, you use the armbands, they're terrible. It's horrible. So Coco saw a problem. She hated going out for runs with her phone in her hand or a credit card or her keys or whatever it was. And she has meticulously built and rebuilt and tweaked and fine-tuned a patent-pending sports bra that has a amazing zipper pocket in the front. And so Hummingbird brand is launching, I believe, pre-sales. This timing of the show could not be more perfect. Pre-sale is going on this week. And so we talked all about how Coco has built this sports bra from scratch, where the idea came from, how she's gone about branding her business, the seamstress that she worked with who spoke minimal English, all of that we talked about, and how she is thinking about and wanting to grow this brand. So I will shut up, no more spoilers, and kick it over to this week's episode of Destination Different with Coco Waltz. Hope you enjoy.
So basically, I was hiking before I went to business school. I went to Darden, University of Virginia, which is Darden School of Business. And summer before I moved to Charlottesville, I quit my job and I started doing a lot of hiking. And I'm out in Utah with my friend. And for some reason, we're talking about animals that we might have been in a past life. And she said, "You're definitely a hummingbird because hummingbirds fly super, super fast, meaning move their wings super, super fast, but can stay like still as they take the sugar or the nectar from the flower." And I'm like, I eat a lot and I have a fast metabolism. She's like, "That's you." I eat a lot of sweets and sugary foods. I'm like trying to be flattered. And I'm like, I don't know about that. And then I was sort of fascinated by the bird itself. And because they travel long distances, they can move their wings so fast, but stay still. So there are all these like interesting elements about it, but I sort of like put it aside, didn't really think about it. And then I moved to Charlottesville, and my mom sends me, transitions are hard for me. I don't really love them. So when I move cities, when I start a new job, when I start a new experience, it's a huge undertaking for me. My family knows that. And so it's been encouraging things my way when that's starting off. And my mom sent me this quote about a hummingbird, and I had never told her the story. I sort of put it aside after hiking. The quote was beautiful and really touched me. And then I was like emotional. And then I'm like, I should go shopping for stuff for my apartment. And I'm going into like Pier 1 Imports, and they're basically going out of business. So there's like basically nothing in there except this one pillow that has a hummingbird on it. It
just keeps coming back to you.
Coming back. And then I looked at the pillow and started crying in Pier 1 Imports. Woman is working there. Just, "Are you okay? I mean, I know we're going out of business, but it's gonna be okay." And I said, "No, I just really love hummingbirds." And since then, I've just admired them and thought it was a great figure for what I'm trying to do.
Gotcha. And so when you started business school, did you have any intention of like, "I want to go to business school because I want to try and start my own thing"? Or was it more so like, I want to get business experience. I want to,
No.
Like, what was the purpose of going, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think my parents were very curious as well, because I did have a great job before, but that's not what business school is about. A lot of people have amazing jobs before. It sounds cliche, but you don't know what you don't know. So I saw business school as an opportunity to like lift up some rocks and see like, what don't I know about what's out there? Just so I can know and either confirm if what I was doing before is great, or if there's something else out there that never occurred to me that I could do. I got in with that mindset, which I think was great. I think some people go into business school thinking, "I'm here and I want that. I want this job." And that works for some people, doesn't for others, and can be disappointing. I didn't have any like North Star per se, other than I just think I should get this MBA. That was pretty much it. Honestly, I worked this past summer. I did an internship in investment banking. I was definitely not on the entrepreneurial track just yet. It took a few classes to really make me feel like my idea wasn't just a me problem.
Yeah. And so business school is a 2-year, like usually traditionally a 2-year program. Is that what yours was? Like 2 years of school?
Yeah.
And did you just graduate?
I did just a week or two ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And like, at what point did it start to become clear, like, oh, I have an idea for something? Was this coming up and it was like at a class project, or was it something independently that you came up with that you were like, oh, this has some potential?
Yeah, it's actually both. So when I was at BC, I was training for the Boston Marathon my senior year because I played a fall sport, so I didn't have to, worry about that. I had the spring myself to do what I wanted. And when I was training for the marathon, I always brought my phone with me on a run because I'm not like the hard. I am a big runner. I love to run, and I put a lot of mileage in. But I'm not like the most intense runner that bringing like not bringing a phone. Like there are different levels of runners, and I from the research I've done, extreme high caliber runners are not thinking about their phone when they're going on a run. And they don't necessarily even care about music. Like they want to know their mileage, and they're wearing like a watch for that and how they're doing. I'm not quite there, and I don't think I ever will be. I like music, and I actually need my phone for safety because I've had bad experiences where I've been in areas where I was scared and I wasn't safe. And so I feel strongly about having that with me. And so when I was running for and preparing for that marathon, I was like, geez, my hand, I'm gonna get carpal tunnel syndrome, like holding this
It
phone.
is so. I've now been having. I mean, I'm one of my questions is, are you going to make a male version at some point? Because I like it's a pain in the ass for me too. But anyways.
It's such a pain. And I hear about it, it's a unisex pain. All of us deal with it. And I thought to myself, okay, so I'll just use one of these armbands. I guess that's what's on the market. And then I would be running for 2 miles. And not only could I not like change a song, reach my phone, but I was like, this arm feels significantly different. And then by mile five, I just was straight up frustrated and needed to switch the arm. And there's actual, I don't want to waste time on going down that tangent, but there are real studies out there about unequal distribution of weight on your body when you're running. And so I was fixated on, okay, I always run and work out in a sports bra, and I always and I know I need something at my center of gravity. And I was like, okay, so those two things work. And then I just one day like stuffed, I like so I sewed the padding of like a padded bra into my sports bra, and then between the padding and the like outer layer of the sports bra, I just slotted my phone. So I never wanted my some women are fine just like stuffing their phone in their sports bra and they feel it like right against their breast. And I wasn't like I didn't want to do that. I just knew something was like not didn't feel great about that. So I was like, I want this separation. So I tucked it between there. And then I was like, wow, it changed. I was excited to run. I was like, I have my hands free there. It was a game changer. And so I was running since 2016 like that by myself because I
Did
thought
you run the marathon
I
with that, like?
ran it like that. Yeah. My mom was like, no, you should bring an armband. I ran a marathon in the armband. And after that one, I was like, this is slowing me down. So then I ran New York and I shaved like 25 minutes.
Really?
And I think it was, I mean, it was definitely related for me because I was literally spending time like adjusting this armband during the Boston Marathon. And I wasn't running the Boston one for time. So anyway, my times have only improved through like better through a better sports bra. And super passionate about it.
That's awesome. Okay, so you've basically like jerry-rigged this, prototype in 2016. And at what point did you like say, okay, like this idea or this thing that I've been running with for years, like how do I make this real and sell this to people and get this in other people's hands?
That's a good question. So that's where the class part comes in. So the summer before I was telling you I did a bunch of hiking. I also went to Alaska and I did the Anchorage Marathon just because I was like, this is
How
a
many marathons have you done?
I've done six.
Six, okay.
But I took a major break for COVID, which is ironic. I feel like people picked up running and started running more, but we're not really able to do like real marathons. And so that'll be an interesting surge. I think there'll be a lot
So
of
you weren't
signups.
one of those people that was like running like a marathon like in their neighborhood, just like, I'm just
No.
gonna run 26.2 just like for
I
myself.
know, no. I mean, people were going crazy. And honestly, if that's how they take out their like angst and inner being like caved up, I'm supportive of that. I'm also a big we can tangent conversation talk about running and how that's I think saved a lot of people mental health wise. But yeah, so I ran Anchorage and I was at like I was getting at the start getting ready and This had happened to me before. This actually happened to me in the, at the start of the Boston Marathon. But some women just were curious, like, where my phone was. Because you, depending on how tight the shirt is, you can sort of see an outline. And I just, like, was clearly hands-free. And I had no belt around me. I didn't have a fanny pack. Like, and they're like, where is your phone? I'm just curious. And I, like, lift up my shirt and show them. And some women are like, I hate running with it. And again, these are more my level runners. They want it, they need it, but they're not like, you know, they know they're not going to win the damn thing. They're like just out there to prove themselves. And they were like, they just were like, I want that. I have that problem. And I was like, whoa, so I'm not crazy. I used to think I was just solving a me problem. And so that experience like stayed with me, but then honestly left when I started business school because the start of business school is super, super intense. And so I kind of forgot about it even at the start of business school. And then towards the end of my first year, you can take electives. And I took this class with this amazing professor. And it's called effectual entrepreneurship, which is basically like taking your bird in hand, so like what you're good at as your means of developing an idea. So my skill set is like, I was an athlete at BC. So I have an athletic network, right? So that's a bird in hand. I also run wear sports bras, bird in hand. So it taught me that being an entrepreneur is not necessarily a matter of like, you need to have these skills. It's more like, this is your background. These are your skills from prior experiences. You don't need to be like an entrepreneur from day one. And then it sort of kind of disarmed this idea that I need to be this like genius that was sitting in my apartment when I was 12 and coded this amazing thing called Google. Like it's not
right.
it like took that illusion away, and then
it made it like less intimidating almost.
Yeah, less intimidating, exactly. And I pitched to women. There were probably like 15, 20 women in the class, and this is March of 2020. And they would like, so they were private chatting me. So this isn't in class. And, you know, maybe they wouldn't have said, that's what's so crazy. Like, yes, I did not love being like Zoom University for a little bit, but I'm wondering like, would they come up to me after class? Because it did enable a lot of private chat conversations that might not have happened in person. Cause maybe people are just afraid to say like, oh, your idea is amazing or something like that. Mm-hmm. I had like 10 or 15 private chats out of like 20 women in that class. Like, I hate this problem. Like, I'm not a big runner like you, but I hate carrying my phone when I walk because shorts are not pockets, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow, okay, I'll just do this idea for the class. And then I have not looked back since.
That's awesome. So, okay. So you're in this class and it's like, is it actually part of the like assignment is to like develop a real product?
Yeah.
Like that's like part of the thing.
Yep. And you actually pitch your product very early on in the class. So the teacher is less focused on your pitching capability, like your ability to, you know, get investors involved. It's literally on who are you? What are you good at? What do you like? Don't be afraid of being an entrepreneur. And it's pretty open field. She's a very, very impressive teacher woman. And that inspired me. And so I pitched that like the second week of class and ran with it and literally and figuratively. And then I basically structured my entire second year at Darden around classes that would help this grow.
Mm-hmm. And so what has that last year looked like for you? Cause it seems like, at least from like what I can gather, my internet sleuthing, that like within the last couple months, really you've like officially launched the brand, you know, the product is out there. It's available online for purchase.
Right.
Like, what did it look like to get to that point?
Yeah.
To actually launch?
It's a hard road. I'm not going to lie. Honestly, being an entrepreneur is super vulnerable because you are bringing a product to people. You know, it's not perfect that was the hardest part for me, bringing an imperfect like prototype to a market, because I just was, I was obsessed with like a perfect product for my customers. And you have to get over that hurdle because you'll never have a first prototype perfect. And so you have to get over like selling an imperfect. It took a lot of coaching from this one awesome professor at Darden that said to me, he's like, just sell. Like people, like they will forgive you these early customers. They want to be your first customers, and really legit stuff. So a lot of women that I, you know, went on a limb to email and say, look, I'm thinking of starting this company. I first did, I should back up. I first did a survey, and I was really lucky because I had 350 women take it. And in initial surveys, that's pretty awesome. And that speaks to being an athlete at BC, being at Darden, and then also like a good job between. So another thing in this process is being super thankful for a strong network, because that helped me get really good insights. Mm-hmm. So anyway, once I did that survey, I was like, okay, I should put a product behind this. And then I went to a local seamstress, and who doesn't speak English. So that was a little bit of a hurdle at first. And we worked together for 2 months on trying to put together what I had in my brain out in physical form. And when she so basically when I first started, my prototype was like, I had a sports bra and then like a patched pocket on the outside, still the zipper feature, because I was like obsessed with the ease and accessibility of like opening, closing a zipper. I didn't want anything else. So one thing that I was really strong on, but the other things I was like, oh, I could do this, I could do that. But once she and I communicated and had this epiphany of like, this is the invisible pocket, meaning like there is a pocket within this, it's sort of like how your pants pocket, like you can pull out the fabric of that pocket, right? So I wanted that, but I wanted it sewed down, so what it wouldn't like bunch up in the bra. Like just obsessed with these little details. And she probably was like, this girl is so crazy. But because of COVID, this seamstress had no weddings, no events to tailor dresses and suits for. So she looked at me probably like I was this like child of God or something. Cause she just was like, every week I would come in with like 15 sports bras. And I was like, I want you to do this. Blah, blah, blah. And it was just so funny because she's like, you were crazy, but thank you. So anyway, after iteration, I finally was like, I need to start actually selling these. Because before I was sort of asking women to give me their sports bras so I could like, sports bras they don't care about, and give them back to them with this pocket. And then, so it was like, I was just paying my seamstress. I wasn't like buying fabric, or buying sports bras, whatever. And then I knew I needed to like expand from there. So after the holidays, I came back to Darden, and I was like, it's either I'm gonna go for this, like launch a website and do the damn thing, or I'm just gonna like chill out with this seamstress and say this was fun.
And wait, hold on, this seamstress that doesn't speak, like, does she speak any, how did you communicate? Like, do you go in there and you're just kind of like pointing and drawing things and like sketching on a napkin? Like, how did you communicate with her if she really didn't?
That literally drawing. I would bring in things that I wanted to see. So I brought in a pair of shorts with the pocket that came out, but then would say pedo as like butt in Spanish. And I was like, I would say like, I would drop one word, like strong one words in Spanish to understand, like help her say that, like, I want this butt to just level set. And then one of my really good friends at Darden actually speaks Spanish fluently, and I brought him. And funny enough, he is the founder of a shorts company, which I should introduce you, Burrow Gear, which is a really cool shorts line. So anyway, he started using her as well to create his shorts. So there's a massive network effect at business school. And then when you throw a pandemic on it, there are just like ideas brewing.
Yeah, ideas going everywhere. Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that there's this little Spanish seamstress who's helping you out make this come.
Yeah, out. Yeah. She's from Honduras. Yeah.
Too funny. Okay. So you get to the point where you're like, shit, I'm doing this for real. Like this I'm going to make this a thing. Do you have, I guess, like, do you have like a final, like, okay, this is kind of it. Like now I want to make this like in bulk. Are you like, I want to do an order of 100 of these, 1,000 of these. Like, what does that start to look like?
So once I started making, I was making them with my seamstress, probably 20 a week starting in February. It was a little scary because at first I was just making them without having those orders, because I wanted to test that feeling of having inventory without orders, because it's a very anxiety provoking feeling. And I wanted to try to get comfortable with it, because that could have been that can be a reality with manufacturing. Someone might listen to that and say, well, you should be preparing for having too many sales and not enough inventory, which is a great problem to have. And I get that, but like the way my mind work is works is I need like to prep for the other thing because that's more scary to me. So anyway, I would go there. And then when I had that inventory, it would actually force me to email. So I would email groups of 30 groups of women at a time and just say, hey, I've launched a sports bra brand. You're an exclusive invitation. This is an exclusive invitation to buy one and I gave them the password to my website so that they could go on and buy one. So I was managing demand that way. And then one day in March, after I had filed a provisional patent on my design, or actually it's a utility patent, not a design patent. But anyway, after I filed that, I opened the website up and I just kind of let it be there. And I started doing a little more posting just to see, you know, could this sell a little bit more organically without this reflection. So that was my way of managing demand. I started to get orders from people that I didn't know, which was really cool. That's a crazy feeling, by the way, when you're like, I literally
see a name, and you're like, I have no idea who this name is connected to.
So that when that happened, that gave me energy to basically re-engage the manufacturer, which I thought was a separate, very hard journey because U.S. manufacturing card, you want to be able to manufacture in the U.S., but it's really expensive and it's a very from what I've experienced, broken. So a U.S. manufacturer, for example, might make your bra, but they won't provide the fabric. You need to go out and buy the fabric.
Yeah.
They might also make your bra, but they don't put your logo on it. So we're already talking about three different stations in the supply chain before it's even gotten me. And I'm responsible for getting the fabric. And so back to the bird in hand, like I am not a fabric engineer. So that's not my bird in hand. So we're talking like that's a potential loss of like 2 months, three, because you can go down a rabbit hole looking and feeling for the right fabric. Some founders of retail companies will tell you that that's you need to be obsessed with your fabric. That is true, but I have a value add with my sports bra, right? It's not just any sports bra. Like, yes, of course I want to win the comfort contest, but what I really want to know is my pocket killing it for these women? Like, do they love using it? Once I have that, I will hire somebody. You know what I mean? I just need to be hyper focused on that. So I am now actually about to sort of fast forward. I am now about to place my first order with a manufacturer for 400 sports bras. And I'm going to launch a sort of a pre-sale very soon to help kind of like put orders in first and do like a special invite. And it's exciting because it's like before, if it didn't make sense to you before, I was like buying sports bras like basically at wholesale and then bringing my seamstress and she would redo the front the way I wanted. So that's very like time and cost expense. Like, I'm like already buying a sports bra, paying a seamstress. Now I'm like moving to the zone where this sports bra is fully Hummingbird and fully, fully mine.
Got it. So like those like OG ones, like they didn't have a logo on them or anything like that. Like they were kind of just like plain sports bra, whatever color pocket.
Exactly. I had on my website black and white sports bras because that's like standard for what women could buy. But I would literally like write hand notes to the women receiving them being like, hey, so I ran out of white sports bras. Here's a dark green one or a camo one. Like, hope you love it. If not, like, I will send you another one right away. So good customer service for sure. I write all hand notes because I feel like I need to explain to these women. Because like I said earlier, I am trying to get them a perfect product. So I just feel this need to admit to them, like, this isn't my best work, but it will get it. And most of them are my friends and family. And they're like, chill, like, I'm just trying to support you. But I think it matters.
It does. It will. It'll help in the long run.
I think so.
I'm curious about filing for a patent. Because you've talked to a few people that have like created the, like, you know, it's more or less an invention. It's a product in itself that you've created that like doesn't exist. So what was that like of filing for patent? Like, what is it exactly on? Is it on the technology? Is it on the design? Is it on the concept altogether? Like, how does that work?
It's a great question. And that's why I had to use a IP lawyer, because these are things that you, if it's, again, not your bird in hand, you will waste too much time on it. Everything is a time game when you're a founder, because of course there's a billion things you could do at any one point, but what is the most important one or two most important things to do that you need to get done in the next 2 weeks? So that's sort of how my mind has been framed because of this class. It's like, I took this class that's structured around 2 week sprints. And one of them one of the sprints that I needed to focus on was like IP of my product. Like what, how do I protect this? Because if I want to use social media and I want to use all these channels to get my product out there, I need to protect it. So how am I thinking about that? And so I talked to a patent. I do actually have a patent lawyer. He was the one that filed my provisional. And design patents are, so I'm right in between like design and utility, because you can use my pocket, but it's also a design, right? Like and the problem with a design patent, and I'm massively summarizing, so for the lawyers that listen out there, like I definitely am omitting some key facts, but with the design patent, I think it's a lot easier to skirt around if another brand wanted to copy it. For example, like I might do, let's say I have a 9-inch zipper across the front instead of like a 12-inch zipper, whatever. Like, is that difference in inch going to, does that mean that that brand is actually not copying me? So it's out there. This is really fine balance between being hyper specific and broad enough to like capture these other potentials.
Yeah.
Right. And then also still get approved. So if I say, zipper can range between this and that, then that might decrease my chances of getting it, because it's like, oh, this is all over the place. You're basically just trying to claim like anything with a zipper. So, and obviously lawyers, good patent lawyers understand that game, and they have had practice trying to, you know, get through that. But it's really, the reality is IP with a patent isn't like, shouldn't be the most, like you shouldn't rely on that as your ticket to create the most epic brand, company, product. Honestly, I have gone, the one thing that has just helped me keep going is accepting that if a Nike or a Lulu or a big brand like that wanted to take my idea and just run with it, they would. And I don't have like the time or the legal capacity to, you know, like take them down for it. What I am trying to do is build a brand that it like, that is a brand that is the strongest form of IP to me, right? Like, trying to think of an example, but Allbirds have the most minimal branding, but that is almost their brand, right? Yep. Like you just know their shoes. And even if you saw like a similar looking shoe, you're like, but that's not Allbirds. You just know. That's like sort of my North Star in the branding department, but I think it's still worth getting a patent. So if, for those that don't know, that provisional patent basically buys you a year to use, like tinker with your idea, because you could change it and say like, oh, maybe I'll do this fabric, whatever, and before you officially submit, and it gives you some priority in that like lineup for when you do submit. So I plan on doing a full-blown patent, because it could get to a point, you know, down the road where I want to like license this idea or this utility, if you will, to another brand. I want to have that optionality. But that patents take a while, so I'm not like resting my.
Yeah, you're not. Control. That's not like anything immediate future.
No, it's not immediate future. Especially since I'm constantly just making sure that this, like, I'm obsessed with proof of concept. Like, when what makes my day is when a woman that I've sold a sports bra to or a friend texts me and said, like, I just wore your sports bra. I am obsessed with like running hands free now. I can't believe I used to like run with this in my hand. And then I have some women say like, oh, this was amazing for carrying my credit card, because higher caliber runners that I've sold to are not usually using it for the phone, but for them, like, they're like, oh, it's perfect. I could put my goo pack in there, because it's getting summery and hot out. Like, women are not running with leggings with side pockets, and no one wants to run with a fanny pack. So it's been, those are the texts that honestly just keep me going. Mm-hmm. Wow. This is working for you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned like the building of the brand and how you're working on doing that.
Yeah.
Obviously we talked a little bit about the name, but like the design elements, you know, the hummingbird, the colors, the kind of what the brand stands for. Like, is that, you know, is that all you, is that coming all from your brain? Do you have people that you're working on that with? Like, how is that brand marketing side of things shaping up?
That's great question, because I talked about time earlier, about how, you know, you could do a billion things as a founder. One place where I lost time because I just agonized over it were brand colors, logo, and name. I'm honestly, I love Hummingbird, but I'm still like, is that too long? I still like loosely over it. spent a lot of time on the, in the logo department. I was just like, what does it, I don't like this. It's not athletic looking enough. I really wanted simple, but then I also wanted colors that popped and also were different. And I think people shy away from like clashing primary colors. They're like, oh no, that doesn't work. And one day actually I was at home. This is probably what allowed me to come home, or sorry, come back to Darden to pursue this idea, because I actually had finalized the logo and felt really good about it. Had I not done that milestone, I might've just come back and been like, I can't get through this, which it sounds pathetic, but that's a reality of some hurdles, depending on like who you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such like a signifier of a company and a brand too. Like it is, like
it is.
I imagine it feels good to like, okay, I got this right. This is what I want. Like,
yeah. Here's the irony though. It'll change.
Yeah.
That's what so many people would tell me. It didn't matter. I was like, I can't move forward unless I have this the way I want. But I was just doodling one day on a blank piece of paper. As my dad was like taking calls and his kid, this is like around the holidays. So I was home. And then I had finally like traced the bird that I thought was perfect. And, then I had a family friend connection that like could digitalize my drawing and play with colors. And then once I saw that bird, I was like, I love that. And birds are super common now, I think, in a lot of business, not even just like apparel, which is another hurdle that, you know, is kind of that I think about. But the most important thing for me now is to just keep moving forward. If I have a name, like someone is like, oh, you need to change your name for this reason, I'll deal with it then. But now I'm like at a place where that's not what I work on anymore.
Right. You've got orders coming in. You've got inventory to fill. Okay.
Yeah. I love that. And I just love the colors. So as long as I love the colors and logo that's going on the actual bra, like I'll figure out the name later, you know? Yeah.
And so most of that all, it was coming from your brain. Like you're not working with like,
you know, I could not listen to anybody else. I was like, look, I need to have this.
Yeah. This needs to be mine.
Yeah. I also loved Run With Hum. I just loved that logo because it sort of created this, this oxymoron that you were running, but a hummingbird. Mm-hmm. I love that flash of running so fast. You're flying, but your like chest is able to stay still. So a lot of that just was like, those are North Stars that helped, I think helped me through the finish line on it, really.
That's super cool. When we talked the other day, you said you were doing a pitch competition. So are you looking to like take on investors? Like what are you pitching exactly?
Yeah.
How are you thinking about, you know, now as you start to scale, like taking on money or bootstrapping, like what are you talking about from that standpoint?
Yeah. Right now I'm still in the position where this is a great position to be in. I can bootstrap. When you start a business, I think one lesson from business school that was helpful is like go in with an affordable loss number. So that'll help create guardrails for you. So for me, I had in my head, like I am willing to spend this much and not recoup any of it. And I'm still under that. And so that's like, those are like the guardrails. And that's a great position to be in because I like money from an investor sounds great, but I don't need it. And I think that's like where you're actually pretty dangerous because you can listen, you can pitch your idea, get feedback for free. And then, you know, a lot of people might not be interested or a lot of people just want to give you their thoughts. That's what I found. They just want to tell you like, oh,
have a lot of opinions
and they want to let you know. And they tell you in a way that you haven't, I guess if you hadn't thought about it before. Some people do have that like, aha, whoa, I did not think about that. It's very rare. But the more you pitch, the more, those are just excellent opportunities in general. So I try to take up every opportunity I can to pitch. And one event that I did pitch at was a Darden alumni one, which was awesome because I got to pitch in front of Darden alumni. And the virtual world allows for you to get actually in front of a lot more people than you would have otherwise got in front of, I think. So I've taken those opportunities. I've had great conversations with like a few people that follow up that are super curious about the idea. So I'm definitely interested in getting financial support on like one specific thing so that I can allocate my affordable loss on like branding and marketing versus like paying a manufacturer, because to me it's like really clear what you pay a manufacturer for, you get that product. Whereas with branding and marketing, that's like an area where you actually, you have to spend to test. Doesn't mean you need to like spend a ton, and I don't want to, but right now I haven't spent any money on marketing and social media. So there, with the right investor, like I ideally would have them pay, help fund the manufacturing part of my operations, but not get involved in like the other parts, meaning I don't want to give up equity. I just want like financial support in one bespoke area. But having that type of like investor criteria makes it easier for me to just like, you know, not waste time on, other potential investors are like, oh, give me 50% or whatever amount of your company. And then I'll give you this. Then I can just be like, no, I don't need to do that right now.
Got it.
That's where I'm at. So I'm open to it, but in a very certain makeup.
Right. It would have to be like the exact right scenario.
Yeah. Okay. And I also have help. I have two amazing women that have gotten involved that have made this feel like not just such a lonesome journey.
And are they like part of your staff? Like, are you paying them? Like, they're on board living the dream with you? Like, how is that going?
I wish I could pay them, but I'm not quite there yet. And I'm super transparent with my operations with them. Whatever I make goes back in. That's kind of how it works. They are on board with that. We are all actually UVA. We found each other through UVA. One just graduated undergrad. I just graduated the business school, the residential program, and my colleague just graduated the executive MBA program. So we are like full UVA here. And I think they started just curious along for the ride. And now, you know, we've made really interesting progress. So to be determined what that means for their future. But I do know that I could not be where I am today without their help, because there are some lonesome junctures on the entrepreneurial journey, and they made me feel not so lonesome. So even if you don't have people that work for you or do any, I think you definitely need the 1, 2, 3 people that will listen to what you're going through and on the entrepreneurial journey. Cause you don't actually want to talk about it with everybody. Some people would be like, how's your business going? And I'm just like, I do not want to like catch you up.
Mm-hmm. There's where do I start?
Yeah, where do I start? I just am like, oh, it's great. Like, you want to buy a bra?
And so is that something where you'd like at some point want to have a co-founder or a couple of co-founders or bring on, you know, how are you? It's a delicate process, I imagine. Yeah. But like, how are you thinking about that stuff?
Yeah, I think co-founders, this is the other cool thing about your venture. You can, when you own something, you can like, there's no actual rule book. There are people that did it this way, that way, and you can Google that and you can talk to people, use your network. But when it comes right down to it, like, you can structure it. So if you want to give a lot of equity to somebody and not call them co-founder, you can. If you want to call somebody co-founder but not give them like that much equity, you can also do that. So my mind has kind of been blown by the optionality that's out there and what I can explore. So I'm definitely open to bringing on someone as a co-founder and, you know, like not giving everything away of the company. I'm also open to, you know, giving more away, giving them like the co-founder title and like letting them run with it, you know, as their full-time job, and just have me be an owner. I'm like, when I say open to that, it's just like, those are the thoughts that go through my head. It's not a matter of like not being committed to my venture. It's more, cause I, you know, I also have, I actually have a job that's starting at the end of the summer. So I'm going to have to manage two things and I'm going to need help. That's like a reality I'm facing. And that's why this summer is a very interesting time for me, because what will my demand be like when I put the gas on the pedal? And will it be a situation where I have so many orders coming in that I don't know what to do? Or will it be, you know, I have some sports bras still left over and I love this idea. I can probably keep hustling it on the side. Like, it's just, I don't have, that's like a magic, magic question that I would love to have a crystal ball for, but that's what's going to make my summer interesting, honestly.
Okay.
So I'm open to coming to the end of that summer with like needing to rethink equity, founders, whatever. And the first people I'm thinking of for that are the women that work for me, because they're not friends. That's what's awesome. They didn't start as, they are my friends now, but they weren't like, oh, like I'm your best friend, let me help you. They came to me through the Darden network. I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. And they're just like super competent, awesome women. And I feel very lucky, because one of the biggest challenges I've heard, I haven't thankfully had this issue for ventures, are finding like your early stage employees, like mm-hmm. your not employees, but like your partners, your co-founder, your CMO, CFO, because you want your friends to be involved, but it sometimes doesn't work out the best way. So I feel like that department has been super lucky for me.
That's awesome. So the end of the summer is kind of like, it will be an interesting like,
yeah,
intersection for you.
Absolutely. Of course I say that. And then, I mean, I feel like we just use future dates as like some illusion of control. We did it with COVID. Like, oh, this summer is going to be,
this day it's going to be the, yeah.
Yeah. Labor Day, we are going to be like, everyone just puts a date on things to like just push out you know, because the people don't like uncertainty, so they're like, oh, for the holidays we will be able to travel. I do it too. It's just funny. I'm saying that now, like I could say, oh, the summer I will have all of my co-founder stuff figured out, and then it's like end of summer and I'm like, no, I have no idea.
Got it. Changing gears maybe a little bit, but you mentioned like earlier, you do these like 2 week sprints, and that's like kind of how you've built this. But like, what does your day to day kind of look like right now as the owner, founder, operator of this company? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question, because some days I just want to talk to customers to make sure that they are loving my product, because sometimes I'm moving so fast with a manufacturer that I'm like, well, shoot, I haven't talked to a customer in a couple of days. Like, I need to check in. I almost need customers, but I need them more than just like a end user perspective. I need them for fuel and pulse checks that what I'm creating is changing the way they experience working out, what active experiences. And that is like super, super important to me, because one hurdle that I didn't talk about getting into an apparel brand business, like building a brand in apparel, is I don't want to just create another product in this world, because there's a lot of waste. There's a lot of you like going to Marshall's or TJ Maxx, you're just like, wow, there's 8,000 yoga pants in there. Like, why do we have this? There's a lot of waste, and there's a lot of products, and I don't want to just like participate in this cycle of, you know, wasting water just to create, you know, one item of clothing. So I'm really conscious of that. So if I'm not delivering value to women that are buying my sports bra or like any other products I delve into, I want to take a hard look in the mirror and be like, all right, what am I doing? Because I don't want to contribute to the waste that's already going on in the world and such like a, so I don't have sustainability like as my way of like, I haven't, I'm not going out of my way to manufacture certain fabric that only like, I haven't gotten there.
Right,
yet.
It's not necessarily like a pillar of the brand just
right.
yet.
It's not a pillar of the brand. Not because I don't care about it, but because then like, I think to make headway, you have to be hyper-focused on like one or two things. For me, that does this pocket rule, and do women use it and love it? So that's like my North Star. And that's what I'm focused on for my customers. And when I reach out to them and get that pulse check that, oh, I love it, here's my feedback, that kind of gives me energy to like, all right, then go back to the manufacturer, like go back and forth on editing. I think right now what is a major like to do for me, and when we, you know, end this, I'll need to get right back to, is it's like the social media of the pre-launch, like because I have, you're right, like I've launched it, but I didn't regret. I like did one, I changed my profile picture on Facebook and said, hey y'all, I just started a company, check out my website. That's all I've done on Facebook. And I like, my LinkedIn is not updated. Like I have an Instagram, but my colleague monitors it, manages it. Honestly, the social media part like makes me cringe. It's really, that is like not my bird in hand. I need it to get the word out that I'm like officially launching like Hummingbird made fully owned bras. So that is a huge to do, so that I can like pre-sale 200 and then, you know, start from there with selling selling my very own sports bras instead of a seamstress. And yeah, there's a lot of other to-dos that flow from that. For example, like what type of packaging are you going to do? Like buy a stamp, like, but actually I enjoy that. I like hacking that stuff. For example, like you could buy packaging for your sports bras and it could be this like awesome package. And then it's like, you know, it's $1.50 on your margin that is to the package, or you could just buy like 50 cents, same brown package, recyclable, and just throw a stamp on it. That's fine to me. I like that. I don't want the bra wrapped in plastic. They can just get it in the thing. I don't care. So those type of little cut, little hacks are actually fun for me. Some people like agonize over that, but thankfully I've enjoyed that part. I don't lose as much time on there. I lose more time on the, like, is this landing? Does this work?
You stuck it in there very briefly, but this is maybe, you know, a year, 2 years, 10 years down the road, but like you did mention, you know, new other things, other ventures that you hop into.
Yeah.
Like, is there a vision at all of like, okay, yeah, I'm making sports bras now, but I would love to make this thing or another different type of product. Like, have you thought about that at all in the longer term?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned pitch competitions. I've done a few of those and I have pitched in front of probably 20 men and maybe 2 or 3 women. So that's like the reality of the investor landscape. There's more men than women. And the first question I get, not always the first, but often the first, whether it's, you know, the right first question to ask or not, is I'm like, you said this too, I'm a guy and I don't wear sports bras, obviously, but I have this problem. So are you going to solve this for me? And so I sort of like thought about, oh, could I solve this for men too? And then I realized like, that's maybe not like what Hummingbird is all about. So yeah, I think I'm really just focused on a women founded, women owned, for women business. So in terms of like exploring other businesses or products, I think I want to stay honestly in the women product lane. I just feel like the more exposures I've had to how dominated investor VC and, you know, just
startup
community is just very majority men. I feel even more inclined to just like, how can I keep making really good products for women, and be proud about it, right? Like, I think some people are in the corner and like, you need to create something for men to make it like relatable or whatever. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. Where I do think there's an interesting opportunity is in like the unisex land, because, which was maybe a tough sell for sports bras, but I did want to fire back in one pitch that I got from a judge that was like, oh, what are you doing for men? And this is like right after I pitched a 4-woman product. So it's sort of an insensitive question, in my opinion. And I wish I had said, oh yeah, the future of Hummingbird is gender neutral sports bras. And you are like our first, and you are our influencer for it. What do you think? Like, and I mean, that sounds crazy now, like see men in sports bras, but the sky is the limit, honestly. Like if I could make a gender neutral sports bra, and people have encouraged me to like that, to think crazy
right.
like that, because then you reach this next level of your mind.
I mean, every guy I see in professional soccer right now wears what is more or less a sports bra, like exactly. under, and it tracks their health. And like, it's going that way.
I know, Ryan, like that actually, when I saw that, I was like, all right, this is not that crazy. So that's what I'm saying. You say this crazy idea and then you find like validation from it. And so anyway, I don't know. I'm just really curious to see how this goes. And then I guess I do want to make a plug for just business owning in general. I think you do not need to have an epic idea to call yourself like an entrepreneur. I think you can go out and run any type of business. Like if it's a fruit stand or you want to sell hats or you want to sell just some other product that's already exists, but you want to do it better. Like that is entrepreneurial in and of itself. And that frame of thinking like wasn't something I was, you know, wasn't a mindset I was in pre-business school. So I think that's pretty powerful. And I hope that anyone listening feels empowered by that. So it's certainly empowered me, because maybe I go off after doing sports bras to then do, you know, a different line of work or a different business owning of a product that already exists. I mean, sports bras already exist, maybe not with this unique pocket I have. But I think business owning is super cool.
I'm clipping. I'm gonna clip that.
Yeah, I mean, it's borrowed from the many lessons that I've had from speaking to other founders, which is why I love your podcast, because there's a lot of energy exchanged when you hear like another founder going through something you went through that you thought was a super lonely. It sounds cliche, but it's very true.
Yeah. No, I mean, I always tell people like it, I come out of every one of these interviews on like a high, because everybody I talk to has like the same energy, the same level of ambition, the drive, the like empathy for, you know, trying to build something. Right. It's always fascinating.
And this is your business too. Destination Difference. So there's so much you're borrowing like subconsciously. It's super cool.
That was the reason I started in the first place. I'm like, I just want to talk to smart people and hear what they're up to.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I have a couple rapid fire questions to wrap up. All right. We'll start with, you could have any celebrity, any athlete, any musician, anybody as a brand representative for Hummingbird. Who would you pick at this present moment?
That's so interesting, because I have a good quick story. Katie Spots, she was just interviewed on Joe Rogan on his podcast. She is the youngest woman to row the Atlantic and the first woman to run across Rhode Island, like the state, and New Hampshire. I went on a whim. She posted in, by the way, like side note, Facebook groups are amazing for customer insights, because like I'm in this go running group. I'm in this like women run USA group. They just like post all the time about their thoughts. Anyway, she posted in that and I was like looking, she got so many likes so quickly. And I started like Googling her and I was like, whoa, this woman is badass. And then I just went on a whim and messaged her on Facebook. Like my mom always tells me, you never know unless you ask. Like you will never know if she would be interested in repping your brand unless you ask. She's not a mind reader. So I just reached out. She replied, and she's like, "I'd be happy to try your sports bra." Doesn't mean she's going to be an influencer, but she is the type of person that I would love for my brand, because I didn't really get into this, but she is really about like body confidence, empowerment in women runners. I think a lot of women runners that you see are, you know, super lean, which is a product of running a lot, but there are a lot of women runners out there that are not like this stick figure and should be really proud of their bodies, because there's a lot of that in women brands anyway. And I want to be a brand that has an influencer that people see and they're like, I look like that. So that is super important to me. And so my answer is Katie Spots. She also, I feel like, is starting her own business as she's taking off. So maybe someone for you.
Maybe we'll get her too. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's question one. Question two is, you get a billboard in Times Square for Hummingbird. It's free. The media is paid for. What would you write? What would you put on it?
I used to hate writing with my phone too. ...
I like that. Okay. Simple. That's great.
Yeah.
And last question. I ask everybody on the show this, I end every episode with the sign off of stay weird. So what makes you weird?
A lot of things. Wow, where to begin? I think my idea makes me weird. I think people look at me and either say that's genius, but might still be like, this is weird. I actually, it's funny, I just had a customer purchase my sports bra because they were weirded out that this would actually work. They're like, how does your phone not bounce around like crazy, like I'll run in this and it'll be just like flopping everywhere. And then she came back to me and was like, I didn't even notice it. So I think what makes me weird is my idea. And I'm proud of that weirdness.
Is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. Big thanks to Coco for coming on this week's show. I still might buy one of those sports bras. I need it so bad in my life, because it is the worst. It is just terrible having to go out for a run and just hold your phone the whole time, hold your keys the whole time. It sucks. So you might see me this summer rocking a Hummingbird sports bra. If you want to keep up with what Coco's doing,
We've got all her info linked up in the description of the show. She is Run With Hum on Instagram. Same thing for her website. Like I said at the top, pre-sale is going on right now. So she's doing a limited run and her first batch of sports products. So if you want to get in at the ground floor, support a hungry, hustling entrepreneur, go check out her link in the description. That is all we got. That is all we got for this week. Like I said at the top, studio number 4. I hope you're enjoying the audio quality. I hope you can feel the coziness of my new home. And I'm so excited to bring episodes 90, 100, 120, 150, 200, 1,000 from this new studio. And by studio, I mean a desk in my bedroom with a chair and a handheld mic that I bought off of Amazon for, I think, like $38. But a studio is a studio, and I'm excited to be here. So thank you to everybody for tuning in today. We'll be back again next week, next Wednesday, with another episode of Destination Different. Until then, stay weird.
Superpowers. We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know the words.